Somebody just asked me, is Beyonce that popular that we don't even really know if she changed her last name? Made me think.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and as always you can find me on Twitter at @RedRock_Beeble. We are back with another season preview podcast. Today we're going to be talking about the Atlanta Hawks, a team with lots of changes from last season. And to discuss everything that's hopefully going on with the Atlanta Hawks this season, I am joined by the host of the Locked On Hawks podcast, Brad Rowland. Brad, how are you?
I'm good, Josh. Always happy to be here, man, and talk some Hawks. This is not going to be the most fun team in the world, but it doesn't really matter for fantasy. There's always value to be found.
Yeah, and that's the thing with this team. With so many openings and so many positions changing from last season, is we're going to have a lot of guys that are going to provide value, and they're going significantly underdrafted in fantasy drafts at the moment. So let's talk about the players who actually join this team. And with some teams, the players that join don't really have too much of an impact. But for Atlanta, I don't think that's going to be the case. Some of these guys are going to put up some significant numbers and have pretty decent roles. And we'll start with Dwayne Dedmon, who came across from the San Antonio Spurs. And at this point, Brad, I pencil him in as the starting center for the Hawks. Would you agree that that's the way they're looking at this?
Yeah, I would imagine. You know, the Hawks are never too keen on releasing a lot of information before the season starts, but I'm assuming that Dedmon will be the guy opening night for sure.
Now, in terms of your minutes, like he started for San Antonio for stretches last season, and I think he was a large reason why they were the number one defense for the entire season. The team looked better when he was out there starting over Pau Gasol, but he didn't play 28 minutes a night or 27 minutes a night. What sort of role, like obviously we're talking about a much less talented team here in Atlanta, but what sort of role is Dedmon having as a starter? Is he going to be a 20-minute starter like he was last year, or is he going to be pushing to 24 or to 26 or 27? Like, how do you see that sort of working out?
I think I would assume somewhere in the mid-20s. I don't think you're going to see much more than that because they do like Mike Muscala, who they have behind him, and Dedmon has never played that kind of role. This would be, if he plays that much, it'll be by far the most minutes that he's ever played in the NBA, and I expect that to happen, but at the same time, I can't see him playing 30 minutes a game or something like that. So yeah, it's probably somewhere in that 25-minute a game range, and you know, offensively, I'm not sure how much of a focal point he's going to be, but just being out there for that much and the way that he defends and protects the rim and rebounds should be some stat stuffing there, even though he's not necessarily an offensive sort of go-to guy.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to be scoring huge amounts of points either. I've got him projected in that mid-20s in terms of minutes, but that means that he can be a top 100 fantasy guy, and that's nothing to do with him scoring. I've got him scoring under 8 points a game, but he's going to rebound the ball. He gets a decent amount of steals, but he blocks shots at a high rate. He finishes at a very high rate in terms of field goal percentage. We're talking at potentially 60+, and he's a pretty decent free throw shooter. So all in all, he's going to be, and when centers can be hard to come by, he's going to be a guy that produces decent numbers, and if he does excel and he starts really playing much better than Muscala, maybe he plays 26, maybe he plays 27 minutes a night, and those numbers, you know, creep up, and maybe he averages a low-end double-double if things really go his way. So I love Dedmon as a late pick if you're looking for some of those big numbers that boost your field goal percentage to get some blocks. He is going to be in as that starting center, and he does have the ability to put up fantasy numbers. So he is an interesting guy. They brought across another center in the Dwight Howard trade, Brad, and that was Miles Plumlee. I would have to assume that he's not going to be seeing the court on a nightly basis as the third string center. Would you assume that he's just brought across mainly as just salary filler?
Yeah, I mean, he was just really the guy they had to take on in the Dwight Howard trade. I do think that at some point we're going to see him, if only just to sort of rehab some of his actual value. But in terms of regular playing time, I can't imagine it's going to happen with Dedmon and Muscala. Once one of those guys goes down, I don't really see the minutes there.
Yeah, look, he's not going to do a huge amount. He's not a great fantasy option anyway. The other guy that came across in that Dwight Howard trade is Marco Bellinelli, and he's a player who should be in the rotation on a nightly basis. He doesn't do much from a statistical point of view. He hits threes, he's a good free throw shooter, but doesn't get to the line. But I'm interested to hear your take, Brad, on how Bellinelli fits into this wing rotation. Obviously, they traded away Korver last season. They lost Thabo Sefolosha this offseason. Timmy Hardaway left as well. So there are minutes opening up there. So where does Bellinelli fit into this two-guard, small forward rotation?
I think especially early on, he's gonna play quite a bit of Fulham because he's kind of the only shooter of these guys. You know, you have Bembry and you have Prince and Bazemore, and those guys are at least a couple of those guys are reasonable shooters. But Bellinelli is really the only guy on the wing on this roster that's really a high end shooter. So I think you're going to see him play quite a bit early on. I don't think he's going to start or anything like that, but he'll be a solid sort of third or fourth wing for them. That's going to be he'll play in every game. He'll get up a lot of threes. He'll be operating with some space on the floor, I think, with Dennis Schroeder and those kind of things. So we'll see how much he actually ends up playing and how long he actually stays on the roster, because he's an expiring contract. It would not blow me away if the Hawks look to trade him midseason if they can, but while he's on the team, he's going to play and get a lot of shots up.
He is a guy that you can potentially add as a streaming option for three-pointers, but that's the sort of role I see him playing, as that guy that plays maybe close to 20 minutes a night, coming off the bench, maybe more early, less later on, and not going to be a huge fantasy contributor. The other guys that the Hawks brought in, there's Luke Babbitt, Nicholas Brasino, and Quinn Cook. Let's start with Babbitt, who started a stack of games for Miami last year, but in that token starter sort of a role. The Hawks have got Ilyasova, who basically plays that similar role to Babbitt as the stretch four. They've drafted John Collins as a power forward. So what do you make of Babbitt? It seemed like the talk coming out of Atlanta is that they're keen on getting him and they are interested in using him. But how does he fit behind those two guys especially?
Yeah, I think for me, he's really just a pure shooter. And that's kind of the only reason why I think they like what he's going to be able to do, because they haven't had a ton of floor spacing in the last year and a half or so. But at the same time, I just don't see him playing a whole lot. I think he would be a good, useful player on their offense. This is going to be a team that's probably not very good offensively in the grand scheme of things. So if they wanted to inject some spacing and some shooting there, they could look to him in some small spurts. But it'll be a bit role. I can't imagine him playing at least regularly a lot of minutes, just because you're dealing with, I think they actually think sort of him more of almost as a four on the floor. So like if you have him playing behind Collins and those kind of guys like that, I just can't imagine him playing a ton of minutes, unless of course they end up burying Collins, which would be sort of a nightmare from a fan's perspective. Wouldn't blow me away early on if Babbitt played a little bit more than he will later on, but it's going to be a pure three-point shoot situation.
Quinn Cook, who was the last player signed to this team to be the third point guard, they'd been talking about we need to bring another point guard in. People were debating who that was going to be, and Cook is the guy who looked okay, I thought, last season at times for the Pelicans. Looked decent at Summer League as well, and now he comes in, I guess ostensibly as the third string point guard, but it's not like Malcolm Delaney blew people away last season. He definitely didn't blow Mike Budenholzer away, as he was benched in favor of Jose Calderon down the stretch in the playoffs. So is there a chance that you think that Cook could overtake Delaney this season, or do you think that he comes in immediately and is in a battle straight for that backup point guard spot?
I think it's going to be Delaney's to lose. I know they've always liked Delaney as a player, although last year he did not shoot the ball well at all. And if that happens again, I don't think it will, because his track record before he came over to the Hawks last year has always been as a pretty good shooter. He just kind of fell off the face of the earth as a shooter last year. But if Delaney can sort of perform in the way that they hope he can, I think he's going to be the number two guy. I do like Quinn Cook quite a bit. I was really excited about that signing. From a regular basketball standpoint, I'm just not sure he's even going to be able to overtake Delaney, and neither one of those guys is big enough to really play a whole lot of time alongside Dennis Schroeder. So I think if you ask me midseason who I think is going to be the number two guy, I think it'll probably still be Delaney, but it's always possible that Cook could overtake him, because I do like his upside quite a bit.
Hi, you've reached the High Fashion Hotline.
Hi, my family's going to a tailgate and I want our style to stand out from the crowd.
Just go to Old Navy.
Old Navy?
Yep, Old Navy's got all the latest fall styles. Plus, during Old Navy's colossal sale, you'll save up to 50% off store-wide.
Did you say up to 50% off?
I did, so don't sit on the sidelines. Old Navy has the perfect pants from $19, stylish dresses from $15, and comfy tees for the family from just $6 right now at Old Navy and OldNavy.com.
We're cheering for Old Navy.
High Fashion, Old Navy. Valid 10-2 to 10-10, select styles only.
They're guys we're talking about for really, really deep leagues. And Delaney's not even a guy that if Schroeder went down, that I'd be all over in every situation in grabbing, because I think you'll see situations where DeAndre Bembry handles the ball as well and won't be just Delaney running things 35 minutes while Schroeder is out or anything along those lines. So he's not like one of those backup point guards where if the starter goes down that you're immediately just grabbing him and you're getting this huge run of value for a chunk of time while the starter is out. I don't have him in that sort of a level. And Brasino, who was cut by the Mavs, he was signed on. He's just going to be an emergency wing type of guy for this team. They also signed Josh. Now, I don't know how to. I always look at, is it like, it's not Corey McGetty, is it Josh McGett?
Or how it's actually It's actually Majet, like Majet. A J.
Okay.
I was where you were until they signed him, then I had to figure it out.
Okay.
So yeah, it is Josh Majet.
Josh Majet, who's a smallish point guard who played over in Europe last season. He's on a 2-way deal, so he'll see very, very limited time in Atlanta. We look at the guys who left this team. It's a litany of names. Paul Millsap went to the Nuggets. Dwight Howard to the Hornets in that trade that brought back Plumlee and Bellinelli. Tabo Sefolosha to the Jazz. Hardaway to the Knicks. And Mike Dunleavy, Chris Humphries, Jose Calderon, and Ryan Kelly are also off this team with Calderon signing. With Cleveland, those other three players currently unsigned. So that's a ton of experience, a ton of talent that is no longer on this team as this Hawks squad really goes into the tank and begins their rebuild. And the guy that is a huge part of this rebuild, I think, is the player that they selected at pick 19 in the 2017 NBA draft, and that is John Collins out of Wake Forest, who I was really, really impressed with in Summer League, not just for his rebounding ability, for his scoring ability, but for his ability to pass. And I didn't think that was something he really had in him. He was hitting, you know, passes at a level I didn't expect him to be able to do. He was quite dominant in Summer League, and I know that he's got a tremendous fantasy skill set. But Brad, the question is, how does he play this year? How much does he play? Because we already said that Ilyasova is probably going to be the starting power forward and Babbitt will get some looks there early. But do you see a situation that by January or something with Ilyasova on a one-year deal that they've just gone, all right, well, Collins has shown us something over these first couple of months. Let's get him in there for 25 a night and see what he can do and really develop him.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping beyond hope that they look to Collins early and often. For me, Mike Budenholzer's reputation is a little bit scary. If you like John Collins, I think if he was given the opportunity to play early on, he would put up some real numbers because that's sort of the guy he was in college and the guy he's been in Las Vegas. I was impressed by him as well. My fear would be his defense is going to be bad early on. And from a real life perspective, Budenholzer is not going to have a ton of patience with that. At least he hasn't in the past. I think it might take like a mandate from the front office to say, play this guy, which might happen because they're going to be rebuilding this year. So we'll see if that happens. But I'm not banking on more than a small role early on. I think it's going to expand as the season goes along because once they figure out that they're not going to be in the race for the playoffs, I think they kind of have no choice but to look to Collins because he's one of their young high upside guys. So I think he's going to at some point get some time more often, at least later on the season. But early on, I think I do have some fear that you're going to see more of Ilyasova, even maybe Babbitt over Collins at times because of the fact that they just don't trust him as a rookie.
Yeah, I think that's 100% what's going to happen. If you go and look on Basketball Monster at our projections, you'll see John Collins come out at just outside the top 120. But that's not saying that that's where he's going to be or where you should be drafting him, because for the first 2 months of the season, he might be playing 12 minutes a night. And then for the last 3 months of the season, he might play 28 minutes a night. And then that rounds it out to, you know, 23, 22 minutes over the course of the season and puts him there. But you're holding a guy who might not produce throughout October and November. It can be a tough thing to do in fantasy leagues. But once that opportunity comes, and we saw Phoenix make that move in December last year, moving Jared Dudley to the bench and putting Marquise Chris in. Once that move comes and they go, all right, now it's time to see Collins, he is going to be a tremendous fantasy asset. He scores. He rebounds. He can block shots despite not being a good defender. He can block those shots, but his efficiency is where it's really going to come in. High field goal percentage, really good free throw percentage as a big man as well. And he's going to be able to have, I think, when he gets that starting job eventually and he's playing 27 minutes a night, he should be a top 100 player in that stretch. It's just that, is that stretch going to begin at the start of November or is it going to begin at the start of February? And that's the sort of decision you need to make in drafts, and whether you can hold on to a bloke for 3 months who's providing nothing is going to be really dependent on yourself and how your league looks. But he is a guy that at pick 19, if you're looking at dynasty drafts and rookie drafts, he'd be going ahead of 19 for me, ahead of a lot of those guys that were picked ahead of him in the real life NBA draft, because his fantasy skill set is fantastic and he was one of the better translated rookies to come out of college this season. So he is a player that should be giving Hawks fans some hope, and let's hope that Budenholzer does actually get him out there at some point and we get to see some decent minutes from Collins. Their other draft pick, Brad, was Tyler Dorsey. Much like Brissino, who I mentioned earlier, I don't see Dorsey really doing much to crack the rotation. He wasn't that impressive in Summer League, I didn't think. What do you think of Dorsey, or did you see something different to me in Vegas from him?
No, I'm 100% with you. I didn't mind the draft pick, but I think he's sort of a pretty much a one-dimensional guy in the NBA. Summer League is not the best place for him. I'll say that because he's more of a guy who's going to be a pure supporting piece, more of a shooter. That wasn't the best place for him to shine. But especially as a rookie, I think he's going to spend a lot of time in the D League. And if he's not in, sorry, the G League. And if he's not in the G League for most of the season, he's going to be on the bench. So I just can't imagine him playing a real role as a rookie. I don't mind him maybe in the future as a developmental piece, maybe a rotation guy in a couple of years. But as a rookie, I just don't see it.
Yep, exactly. He's going to not. He's going to barely crack the top 400 this year if he even does. He's just not going to play enough or be productive enough. And you know, his hope at ever being a quality NBA rotational starter is pretty limited. I want to talk about DeAndre Bembry with you for a bit, Brad, because he was a guy I was really intrigued with last season. He didn't see much action early on. Yeah, started to play a little bit late. But I thought looked really good in Summer League and has a very interesting fantasy skill set with Hardaway, with Cephalosha, with Korver all gone. There are minutes there that are opening up on the wing. So how do you see Bembry this season? Obviously, his shooting's horrendous. And as you would know, he hit a grand total of 1 3-pointer all of last season. That's the problem. But in terms of secondary ball handlers, this team has no one else apart from Schroeder that's going to play, you know, regular minutes. I'm not counting Delaney. But when Schroeder's out there, like, someone else has to handle the ball. And that's what Bembry can do. So I'm not the biggest fan of Kent Bazemore. I don't think he is very, very good. I don't think he's as good as what that contract was. Do you think there is a chance that Bembry pushes Ballinelli or could even go further and push Bazemore for minutes as the season pushes forward?
Yeah, I mean, there's no question that Bazemore's overpaid, so that's not even up for debate at this point, I don't think. But I really like Bembry. I always did. I like that draft pick when they did it. The question is the jump shot. That's the big thing. He's definitely gotten cleaner with the jumper. It looks a little bit better than it used to. I think it was falling a little bit more in summer league than it has in the past. That's the big question. But you're right that they do need that secondary ball handling in a big way. I can't see him pushing Bazemore, but I could see a situation with Bellinelli where they could be leaning more towards Bembry, especially as the season wears along, especially if they look to trade Bellinelli, which again, I think they probably can and will do midseason. At the very least, I'm expecting Bembry to be the fourth wing early on, which is going to be enough to get on the court at least a little bit in the early going. But if he plays well, especially if he shoots well, they have every incentive to play him more and more because he's one of the few guys on this team that's young and cost controlled and really kind of has that projection in a little bit. So aside from guys like Torian Prince and Schroeder, he's kind of that next guy, and Collins, I suppose, he's kind of that next guy. So I'm not sure early on how much he's going to play, maybe more like a 10-minute role early on in the season. But if he plays well, and again, if he shoots well, you'll see more and more of him.
Last season, we saw Budenholzer run lineups with Kent Bazemore at point guard and with Tim Hardaway at point guard because he didn't have that faith in Delaney a lot of the time. So I can see Bembry moving into that sort of role as the wing who runs that point for the second unit. So that's why I can see him getting a little bit more playing time, maybe over Delaney and over Ballinelli as well. And I think that, again, if the shot falls at any sort of rate that's higher than 4% or whatever he hit the threes at last season, that's going to be a benefit. And he finished extraordinarily well, like around the rim, like his field goal percentage was fine. Like he hit his shots when he was in close, but it's just he couldn't do anything outside of that. So he's a name to watch. He's more of a deeper league guy at this point, but with the players around him, you know, Ballinelli and Bazemore far from being stars, and Bembry offering that additional skill set that Budenholzer did like to use last season, he is a name to watch, and he'll be an interesting stream guy even in 20 minutes a game just because of the ability to maybe get 3 or 4 assists in that backup or secondary ball handler type of role. So he is a guy that is pretty interesting to me just because of that skill set. Torian Prince, we talked about him. We just mentioned him there. He is pretty much locked in as the starting small forward. He played 31 minutes a game in the playoffs last year. He's 10 starts in the regular season. Prior to that, he was playing 31 minutes a game. And you would have to think that he's going to be playing 30-plus minutes a game this season as well. Do you think there's any reason why he wouldn't be playing 30 minutes a game? And what sort of things should we be looking for him to improve this year as he takes on a much larger role in the offense especially?
Yeah, I'd be very surprised if he wasn't playing somewhere in that range. I think there could be some growing pains just based, again, on the way that Budenholzer's treated some young guys. But given the way that he came on last year and played so much down the stretch, he's going to be the small forward. And I think, you know, somewhere in the high 20s, low 30s for a minute total will be pretty appropriate. I mean, the big question, I feel like I'm saying this a lot with some of these guys, is his jump shot. We've seen him at least make some strides there. Again, the form was cleaner. He's definitely made some strides as a shooter, but I'm not sure if he is anything more than a wide open sort of catch and shoot guy at this point in time. But you know, when you're playing that much, his defense is really encouraging. I'm not sure how many steals and blocks that he's going to produce, given the way that he sort of making that transition. He played a lot of zone in college, but without getting too deep into that, he's still learning how to play man-to-man defense and sort of how to channel his considerable gifts on the end of the floor. But he's going to rebound. I think he's better than he has in the past. Because he can, I think they're going to sort of let him loose a little bit more on the glass. Because he's a legitimate 6'8". He can really jump. He's pretty strong. So we could see him improve in that area as well. But you know, the big question is the jump shot. He's going to be able to, at worst, sort of fill lanes and do little things and finish around the rim. It's just whether he can become a legitimate threat, not even just from 3-point range, although that's important. But even in the mid range off the dribble, something that he's flashed in the past. I'm not sure how much they're going to let him do that early on. But if he can at least knock down, you know, mid 30% range from three, that'd be a huge weapon for the Hawks, because he's going to be on the court so much and just by extension get a lot of open shots.
In the last month of the season, he played 29 minutes a game. He averaged 10 points, 4 rebounds, but importantly there, he averaged 1.2 steals and 0.8 blocks. And if he plays like an extra 2 to 3 minutes a game, you could be talking about a guy who's at, you know, 1.5 steals and maybe a block a game and a 3 a game. So that's a triple one player. And there are like, I think, 5 of those guys in the NBA last season. So his fantasy value is going to be looking good. His usage is going to take a huge bump forward as well. Without Paul Millsap, without Dwight Howard, he's going to have to take more shots. The efficiency is going to be a concern, but he's currently being drafted at 145 on Yahoo, and doesn't even have a draft position on ESPN, and I think he is a clear top 100 player. There is no doubt about that. So he is a guy that once you start rolling into the 90s in your draft, that you look to grab him, because the role is solid. We saw at the end of last season, in a limited sample size, he has 16 to 25 games, whatever it was, but he was getting the steals, he was getting the blocks, he gives you a 3 a game, he was scoring double digit points, and all of that plus the growth for a second year player plus the extra role that he's going to have, he could get, you know, much higher than what I've even projected him to get. And if he was a top 60 guy, I wouldn't be totally stunned from Taurean Prince, because everything is there. Talent, ability, which he's shown, and opportunity, it all meshes together in a really good situation for Taurean Prince as we head into this season for him. Now, the guy who is going to be the best fantasy producer on this team is going to be Dennis Schroeder. He had an astronomical usage rate last season when Millsap, Howard, and Hardaway were off the court. I think his usage was at 47%. And those three guys aren't on the team anymore. Now, he's not going to have 47% usage this year, but I would be stunned if he was anywhere under 30% with his usage. He's going to be the leading scorer on this team by a significant margin. He'll get his assists, he'll hit threes, and if he starts upping his steals, he's a player that could crack the top 30. At the moment, he's going just outside the top 50, and I think that's fantastic value for Schroeder. He obviously has his real-life downsides, Brad, but he's going to be running everything for this team, isn't he?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you mentioned the usage rate. It was already very high last year, even with guys like that you mentioned on the court, it was still very high.
Yeah, he led the team in usage last season.
Yeah, pretty significantly, and I think it's only going to go up, as you kind of lay out there. I mean, he's really the only guy on the, at least in the starting lineup, that can really create his own shot off the dribble. There's some guys who can make open shots and do some other things sort of in the mid-range, but Schroeder's the only guy really on the whole roster, but especially on the starting lineup, that can really sort of take guys off the dribble, have the ball in his hands. He's going to be asked to create so much of the offense, and that's not necessarily ideal from a real life standpoint, but from a fantasy standpoint, he's going to score. He's going to rack up assists. I think, you know, last year he averaged about 18 and 6. I'm expecting him to average 20 plus points a game this year, honestly, just because of all the usage he's going to get. May not be, you know, the efficiency is the big question with Schroeder, but he did make some strides last year, kind of almost across the board from an efficiency standpoint. I'm not sure if that's going to be able to maintain this year, because all the focus is going to be on him defensively. If you're the opposition, there's really not a lot of guys to worry about except for Schroeder, but he's a, definitely the kind of guy who's going to have the ball in his hands a lot. That's going to help him up from a production standpoint. And I think he's improved enough with his like awareness and things like that to maintain a reasonable level of efficiency that can kind of help you there.
Hi, you've reached the High Fashion Hotline.
Hi, my family's going to a tailgate and I want our style to stand out from the crowd.
Just go to Old Navy.
Old Navy?
Yep, Old Navy's got all the latest fall styles. Plus, during Old Navy's colossal sale, you'll save up to 50% off store-wide.
Did you say up to 50% off?
I did, so don't sit on the sidelines. Old Navy has the perfect pants from $19, stylish dresses from $15, and comfy tees for the family from just $6 right now at Old Navy and OldNavy.com.
We're cheering for Old Navy.
High Fashion, Old Navy.
Valid 10-2 to 10-10, select styles only.
I think he's going to easily get over 20 and 7 this year, and I'm not too worried about the efficiency numbers for him. Over the last 2 months, post All-Star break last season, he was the 44th ranked player in fantasy, and at the moment, he's getting drafted below that, which is just unbelievably stupid to me. He is a guy that in those mid-rounds, if you don't grab a point guard early because you want to grab centers, which I understand, he's one of these guys in rounds 3 or 4 that you grab and you feel real. Again, it's all about having confidence. Like, who's taking the minutes off him? Like, Delaney's not you're challenging him for the starting role. Quinn Cook isn't. He's getting his 30 minutes. He's getting his shots. He's getting his usage. He's going to be doing everything for this team. Yeah, they'll probably suck, but the numbers are still going to be there for Schroeder. So he is a really, really strong target of mine in those mid-rounds. I can't see really too much going wrong with what he'll turn the ball over, but you know that I don't care too much about that. All those other numbers are going to be really, really good for Schroeder. We did touch on Bazemore a little bit earlier on. He didn't play a huge amount last season. He didn't play 30 minutes a night. And that's because he was bad. He only played under 27 minutes a night. He shot poorly, which is, aside from the year before, he'd been a poor shooter throughout his career. And that was a really weird sort of one-off year that he had, more like first 3-4 months of the season. And he regressed back. He struggled with numerous things, but the opportunity is going to be there for him to play more minutes this season, more than the 27, just because of the lack of players around there. What do you envisage for Bazemore? Do you see him bouncing back, or is what we saw last year what he is and he's just going to get more minutes by default?
I think it's probably somewhere in the middle. He really struggled early on last year and actually shot the ball pretty darn well after, like, I think it was like January 1st on, he shot like somewhere in the neighborhood of 39% from three. I'm not sure he's that guy, but I do think he's somewhere in that 36%, 37% range as a three-point shooter, which is kind of all you need him to be. He's going to play a lot. Never going to be the type of guy who's going to fill up a scoring box score just because he doesn't really have the ability to create for himself. But he can definitely catch and shoot, fill lanes. Last year, I think it was probably good for him in some ways in that he was asked to do too much a lot of the time with the ball in his hands. Especially, you mentioned earlier him playing some point guard last year. That's not going to happen now, but he was at least given that experience. He talked a lot last year about pressing as well, and the fact that he was just trying to do a lot to try to justify the contract, which he's never going to be able to do. But if he sort of settles back into a role where he's just a 3-and-D guy, that's all he's going to be. But he's a productive one because he's going to play so many minutes. As you said, I think he'll be a little bit better than he was last year. You know, the jury's out as to whether he'll be quite as good on a permanent basis as he was 2 years ago, but I think he's going to average a career high in minutes this year. I'm not super confident about that, but if you told me he played 30 minutes a game, I would not be surprised at all, which is not crazy up from what I think was like 27 last year. Yep. But if he plays 30 minutes a game, somewhere in there, it would not blow me away if he finished second on the team in minutes behind Schroeder. Bazemore's not a guy that I love either necessarily, but he's okay. He's fine. He doesn't kill you anywhere, and that kind of guy can be useful for you.
Yeah, so that's pretty much how I feel. I think he gets overhyped by a lot of people. I don't think he's all that good. But on this team, like, he can be good, and he can play those minutes and put up decent numbers. And he's currently being drafted at 119. I think he's got a chance to get himself back inside the top 100 this year. So as much as, and I say this all the time in fantasy, it's not about whether I like a guy or dislike a guy. It's about, do I like the value I can get for a guy? And I don't love Bazemore as a player, but if he's there at 120, I'll take him, because there is a really significant chance he's going to easily beat that number. And that's exactly what you want with one of those picks. So not about whether I think he's good or not or anything like that. I think that there is value for him at that sort of spot where he's getting picked. And, not as much value as Schroeder or Prince or even Dedmon, but he's going to have that role there. I still do think that maybe if Bembry really starts to push forward, there could be that role, but it's not going to happen immediately, and Bazemore is going to play those minutes for the majority of this season, at least. We would think that's the way it's going to go. What about Ilyasova? Reverse of Collins, he's going to play the minutes early, and then it's either going to get cut back, or he's going to get bought out, or he's going to get traded in the second half of the season. But you would imagine that he holds or handles the bulk of those minutes at power forward to begin the year.
Yeah, for sure. I think he's going to start on opening night. He was pretty decent when he came over to the Hawks, about a 25-game sample last year after he was acquired in trade. And I think he's not going to have a huge usage rate, but he's a guy who's always been able to score when he's been given the opportunity to do that. He can shoot. He's one of the better shooters on the team. So, and he's always been a pretty good rebounder sneakily. So, yeah, I mean, Ilyasova, I'm kind of in line with you on that. I'm hoping to see more Collins and Ilyasova by the end of the year, but especially at the beginning of the year. And for me, probably as long as he's on the team, he's going to have a role, whether it be a starting role or a like a third big role. He's going to play 20 plus minutes a game on this team. I'd be surprised until or if he gets moved. I just can't see him playing much less than that. So it's sort of a high floor guy because you kind of just know what he is. He's been around for so long, and he'll have the opportunity to at least score a rebound for you.
Yeah, I think that high floor thing is pretty apt. So you should feel pretty confident he's going to give you value around like this 120, 130 zone when he's starting and playing those minutes. But there's no upside in him. There's no upside that, he's going to get traded somewhere and play 32 a night and score 17 points with 7 rebounds. So that's not going to happen. Like, this is what he is. So if you're in a 16-team league, getting him at pick 130, the decent floor works. If it's a 12-team league, then pick 130. Well, you just want to go for upside in that spot. So you'd rather take someone else like a Bazemore if he's around with that, you know, hope that the minutes go up and he can push forward, where Ilyasova, it's just going to be solid. And you're looking at him more in that spot in a deeper league type of situation. And that's totally fine. But if things are going to change for him, it's going to be really the inverse of Collins, of more minutes earlier and things changing later on in the season. I think we've covered everyone on this team that we need to really talk about. I don't think there's anything, unless you've got any discussion on Alpha Carver and his European adventure this season.
No, I think we pretty much covered it. This is going to be a team that is more interesting fantasy wise than it is in a regular season way. So I sort of envy you, because on a daily basis covering this team from a regular X's and O's production standpoint, it's going to be a little bit interesting and taxing. But there's always value, man, as we talked about at the beginning. So invest in Dennis Schroeder and Torian Prince. That'd be my advice.
Yeah, definitely. Now, who is your breakout candidate on this team?
I think it's probably Prince, because I think people know about Schroeder already. I think Schroeder's usage and all that stuff we talked about is going to go through the roof. But a guy who I think could be under the radar and sort of break out in that way Prince is pretty much the only option, unless Collins plays a lot. He'd be the only other option for me. Is if it was me and I was coaching the team, I'd be rolling Collins out there for 25 minutes a night. And if that happens, with the way that he's always produced at every level, he'd be an interesting case. But the safer breakout player would be Prince for me.
I agree with that, and I agree with everything you said there about Collins as well. If I'm going to look at value fantasy guys, the team is just littered with them. Schroeder, Prince, Dedman, Bazemore. Collins you could consider, depending on what we see minutes-wise in preseason and how they run that. Yeah, there's value in all those guys. Mike Muscala might even have some sneaky value in some deeper leagues. DeAndre Bembry could be a sneaky guy in deeper leagues and someone to watch later in the season. There's no real fantasy busts on this team. There's just a stack of value all over the roster, and attacking bad teams in fantasy is a really good way to go about getting these players. And the Hawks are going to be bad, but they're going to produce numbers, and I'm going to watch this team a lot. I watched the Nets a lot last year. I watched the Sixers a lot last year. I'm going to watch this team because I want to see what Collins can do. I want to see Prince develop. I want to see Schroeder go out there and take 50 shots a game. I want to see Collins out in the court, see what he can develop. I want to see what Bazemore is offering. Like, there's a lot to like, and from a fantasy point of view, there'll be stats put up, and you'll go, shit, like, how is this happening? How is Torian Prince scoring 18 points in this game and had 3 steals? And their roles are fairly secure, so there is a lot of fantasy goodness here, and you should be aggressively looking at Atlanta Hawks guys in pretty much all of your fantasy drafts. Now, one last thing before we finish this off, Brad, is I'm asking all the hosts to look at the Vegas over-under totals and give me their bets on that. Vegas put it out, the Hawks at 25.5. ESPN's Kevin Pelton projected the Hawks for 27 wins. Where do you sit on that over-under?
It's funny. I did the Nate Duncan podcast a couple of weeks ago on the Hawks before the number came out, and I basically landed on it. I had predicted 26-56. So I guess I'll take a begrudging over. I think it's a pretty good number, though. Would not surprise me at all if they went under that number. And it really kind of depends on how the organization views this season. Mike Budenholzer is the kind of coach who could overachieve with this group, which is not what the Hawks probably want, to be honest with you, because this is sort of their quick tanking season, and they're definitely in the middle of a rebuild, so winning less games is probably good for them. But it all depends on who's on the team by the end of the year and how much those veterans are playing, et cetera, et cetera. It's a good number. I'll say over if you make me pick, but I'm not. I don't have a huge feeling on this one.
I think I would take the over as well. Do you think they're a better team than the Bulls?
I do. The Bulls are the only team that I think is worse than the Hawks in the East.
Yeah, I think that's right too.
I mean, there's a scenario with the Bulls. If you tell me Levine's healthy and Wade is there all year, that they might be better. But you know, with all the factors in play, I think the Hawks are the Hawks are better coached as well, if you ask me. So that also plays into this. But yeah, I think the Hawks are better than the Bulls. Everybody else, I'm not so sure. There's a couple other teams in that range, you know, the Nets, maybe the Magic, that kind of range in the Eastern Conference, a couple teams in the West, the Kings and the Suns maybe. But yeah, they're better than the Bulls. That's sort of the with as faint of praise as you could possibly give a team. But I would say that's probably true.
Yeah, I would say that too. I think they may be on par with the Nets, and they're probably better than the Suns. Maybe the Kings as well. But yeah, there are teams like the Pacers. People are thinking the Pacers might be worse than the Bulls. There's no way the Pacers are going to be worse than the Bulls. The Pacers are going to be much better than both of these teams and the Nets. Agreed. And they might be like the ninth or tenth seed, maybe even pushing for the eighth, which is not great for them in a rebuilding situation. But that's might be where they end up. They're not going to be as bad as what these teams are going to be. Brad, thank you for coming on, and let us know what's happening on Locked On Hawks, and give us a plug for anything else that you've got happening as well.
Yeah, for sure. You know, we're in off-season mode, but about to start previewing the season on Locked On Hawks. So right now I'm in like a 2-3 show per week schedule, but it'll be ramping up, as I know everybody will be across the league as we get closer to media day and all those things. And once we hit media day training camp, it goes full steam ahead. So yeah, if you like the Hawks or are interested in the team at all, I do that show 5 days a week during the season. So at Locked On Hawks on Twitter and on Facebook. You can follow me on Twitter at BT Roland. I also do some general NBA stuff for Dime Mag over at Up Rocks. So if you like that kind of stuff, do that. And I also write about the Hawks at PeachtreeHoops.com. So a bunch of plugs there. But you can find everything that I write, if you are interested in it, is at BT Roland on Twitter. And please follow the show as well.
Cool. Go and check all that stuff out and subscribe to both of our podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Spotify, and leave us a review. 5 stars would be awesome. Another reminder that Basketball Monster is open for season subscriptions. So go and check out my projections over on Basketball Monster and all the tools for your fantasy team. Brad, thank you for coming on.
Oh, it's my pleasure, man. Always happy to do it.
We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Malcolm Delaney.